This is number 0099, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0099. And coming to you on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet James McGivney, who was the founder of Cheaterville.com, a website that outs those who cheat on their relationships. How did this site get started?
I started it on Valentine's Day. I'm a former United States Marine, and I was overseas with one of my Marine Corps buddies, and we came back to find out his wife had been messing around on him during the entire deployment, and we're thinking, boy, it'd be cool if there's a website where you can go where you could out people like this and pay a phone for the next person.
Larry Hines is a lawyer. He's been a lawyer for 40 years. He's written a thriller about the dark side of his profession called The Beneficiary. Why share the dark side?
You know, we have, by and large, phenomenal judges, but there are those that just don't care and that have their own personal biases and prejudices. And so I'm hoping I'm presenting a balanced approach here, but it's partly just an adventure story, but at the same time to educate the public on a little bit upon our justice system.
Tina Powell is the author of Picnic in Pastiche. Just what makes a great picnic?
Well, there's lots of things that go into a great picnic. I think, of course, always the right people and the right place, but I think that's what's so fascinating about picnics is that we have a perception that they have to be perfect. So there's this certain expectation, and we want to make sure we get the perfect food and the perfect basket and the perfect provision. And so through this whole journey of my life, I've been almost striving every time to have this perfect picnic. And of course, life is not perfect. And it ends up is the joy that we find in the imperfections of life that make the stories interesting.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0099, is Tristan Brand, who is a friend and an amazing photographer. He specializes in work for NGOs and not-for-profit organizations, and you can check out his website at tristanbrand.com. He also has a blog, by the way, and he did a recent blog piece on my other life, that is the job I do as a television news anchor, and I'll put a link in to that blog piece and you can take a look at it. I thank you very much, Tristan, for dropping by the studio, also doing the blog and taking a few pictures too, and check out Tristan's site. Nice stuff indeed. He's a damn good photographer, I'm telling you that. Anyway, let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? A Mexican prisoner hoped to take a trip to freedom by packing himself into his girlfriend's suitcase, but guards at the jail in the southern town of Chetumal grew suspicious when the woman seemed nervous as she was wheeling out the bulging bag after a conjugal visit with the prisoner. Opening the luggage, guards found Juan Ramirez folded into a fetal position in his underwear and socks. Ramirez and his girlfriend face criminal charges over the bungled escape. Ah, yes, love makes you do strange things. Elsewhere, Gina Liberty, age 48, of Fresno, California, was on her way to Manhattan Beach when she took a break near Santa Clarita. When she got back to her car, she discovered she had locked her keys inside, but there was no one around to help. To get attention, she decided to set the hillside on fire. A sheriff spokesman said she got our attention. The fire consumed about a half acre of brush, and she was arrested for arson. Gee, maybe in hindsight, perhaps she should have spent the extra bucks for OnStar. And having lost a leg didn't stop David Phillips, age 44, from breaking into houses in Perth, Scotland, stealing jewels and computers. Until, that is, he left a trail of only right footprints plus crutch marks through the mud all the way from a crime scene to his apartment. It was not the hardest series of crimes to solve, said a police source. Even Inspector Clouseau might have managed to collar him. A court sentenced Phillips to 40 months in prison. He is hoping a prosthetic leg will be available soon, according to his attorney, John McLaughlin. He says, McLaughlin does, this will enable him to lead a more active life. Including what? What? Purse snatching now is what he'll do with an active life? I don't know. Anyway, Tyel Morton, a senior at Russville, Indiana High School, allegedly carried out a pretty standard end-of-year prank, sneaking a blow-up doll into the girls' restroom. "It was just a senior prank, you know," he said later. "I didn't hurt nobody." Well, except the English language with a double negative. "I didn't have no intention to embarrass nobody." Wow, a triple negative. Still, school officials suspended Morton, which kept him from attending graduation, but that's the least of his problems. School officials panicked when they spotted him bringing the package into the building and called the bomb squad. Morton, considered a good student with no criminal record, now faces up to 8 years in prison on felony criminal mischief charges. In this post-Columbine world, said Russ County Prosecutor Phil Cavaness, "That's what you get when these kinds of things happen." And here we thought Columbine taught us about the futility of zero-tolerance mentality in this post-Columbine world. Here's an idea, folks. Why don't we just fill our jails with real criminals? Certainly, we should start with that. Just a thought. And a couple of very odd rescues we've put together in a few stories here under the headline of Oops! Rescues. A 93-year-old woman was rescued by medics in Philadelphia in April after spending several hours stuck in her toilet. According to KYWTV, she had to be carried out with a portion of the toilet still stuck tightly to her body. In Tooting, England, in May, an unnamed senior was rescued by firefighters after he got his testicles caught in a shower seat in which he was sitting while bathing. Ow. And Park Ridge Medical Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee, apologized and paid the bill in June to exhume the body of the recently deceased Kenneth Manis, the man who had shared Mr. Manis's hospital room during his final days, had reported that his dentures were missing, and the hospital determined that they had been mistakenly buried with Mr. Manis. Now, honestly, do you really want those dentures back? I mean, instead of Park Ridge Medical Center digging up poor Mr. Manis, which certainly cost a lot of money and a fair amount of indignity, I'm guessing, wouldn't it have been cheaper, or at least easier, or nicer all the way around to just buy the other guy some fresh dentures? That's all I'm saying. Makes sense to me. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program this week, shall we? There is a website where people can post the names and profiles of those who have cheated on them, creating a database of all the cheaters in the world. That way, if you are about to date or marry someone, you can see if they have cheated before just by searching their name. The site is called Cheaterville.com, and on the line with us right now is James McGibney, who is kind of like the mayor of Cheaterville. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you're the founder of Cheaterville.com, and I understand that you're in the Las Vegas area, correct?
Correct. Well, I sure like the founder title better than the mayor title. It's a lot more appealing. But yes, I am in Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City.
I was about to say, the old adage that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, obviously you're not going by this.
No, you know, it's an interesting thing. We have billboards up that say that Las Vegas isn't the only Sin City, and it has a truth behind that, because if you look at all the postings that are on our website, there are more postings from everywhere else in the United States besides Las Vegas. So we actually have the least amount of postings compared to some other cities, such as Los Angeles.
So when did you start Cheaterville.com, and why?
I started it on Valentine's Day of this year, and I'm a former United States Marine, and I was overseas with one of my Marine Corps buddies, and we came back to find out his wife had been messing around on him during the entire deployment, and we're thinking, boy, it'd be cool if there's a website where you can go where you could out people like this and pay it forward for the next person.
So you started this website at Valentine's. What's the response been like, and how many people have gone up on the site?
It's been overwhelming and humbling at the same time. We've had millions of people come to the site. We get hundreds and hundreds of posts a day. And basically, you know, everyone loves the site except for cheaters. And there are a lot of cheaters out there, and they hate our website. So, you know, we get the good and the bad. I get some emails from people thanking Cheaterville for exposing someone that they thought they were, that the other person was cheating, and they weren't 100% sure. So they put a post, they got some information, and they were happy. And then subsequently, that cheater finds out a few days later, and then they're pissed off that we even have the site in the first place, and they want the post removed immediately. So we get it from all sides.
Well, let's talk about that, the idea of having posts removed. Have you ever had people who, I don't know, have threatened lawsuits or anything of the like in the short time that you've been up with the site?
Absolutely. We get threatened with lawsuits all the time. But what's unique about Cheaterville is when someone posts information about a cheater, the cheater always finds out. They either get blasted on Facebook or they find out very quickly. If they do a Google search on their name, we are one of the first things that comes up now if they're tied into the Cheaterville database. So the person will find out. They will repute the information, the post, directly on Cheaterville.com and say, this isn't true, here's why. Or sometimes they'll admit that it is true, and they'll say, hey, I'm sorry, please forgive me for cheating on you. And the person who posted the information about the cheater can hide the post and remove it. So we put it in the hands of the person who made the post in the first place. They have the power to remove it.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because on paper it sounds like a great idea, but you know there are some people out there who have, for one reason or another, their own agendas. And, you know, saying that someone's a cheater, if they're not, when push comes to shove and it's all cleared up, wouldn't you say the damage is already done?
Yeah, and, you know, and it's unfortunate that that probably does happen on our site. And, you know, maybe there are some people that get in the crossfire of vindictive human beings that are saying they're cheaters when they're really not. But we're not judge or jury. We can't look at every single post and figure out which one is truth and which one is not. I mean, just imagine if Facebook had to do that with every single post that was put on someone's wall. It's impossible to do. And you know, when someone comes to us and they say it's absolutely false, we give them the ability they have it to just reply directly to that post to say, I don't even know who this person is. This is ridiculous. But you know, we have to look at the bigger picture. The site is helping out a lot of people who are catching other people cheating, and they're putting them on the site, or they're on a dating service such as Match.com, and they're about to meet their prince or princess for the very first time. They're Prince Charming, and they want to make sure that they're on the up and up, and they do a quick search for them on Cheaterville, and sometimes they'll get a hit, and it'll make them think twice about going out with the guy because they found out he was married because that previous woman that he was dating put him on Cheaterville.
Now, the website, Cheaterville.com, again, taking a look at the site, I see pictures of quite a few very big billboards that you have in Vegas, in Times Square, other places. Why the billboards? And what's the reaction that the billboard's getting?
The billboards definitely get a lot of reactions. You know, we kind of push the envelope with each one, but they're getting a great response. And we just strategically placed billboards in areas where we knew there was a lot of high volume, high traffic. Times Square, obviously, in New York, that one gets a lot of traffic. And in Vegas, our billboards are all around the airport because we get 30-plus million visitors a year here. So it made sense to have the billboards when people are coming and going from Las Vegas.
Now, you mentioned you got this idea from along with a buddy of yours when you were deployed in the military. Is his wife still his wife, or is she an ex by now?
No. Yeah, it was that divorce came fast and furious right after he found out.
Is she up on the site?
No, you know, and that was his personal decision. He, you know, this was a while ago. He's remarried, and he just decided not to put her on the site. But it's interesting you bring that up because we don't have time limits, so we're noticing people are posting about a cheater, someone that hurt them 3 years ago, and they haven't gotten over it yet. And which is understandable if you read some of the posts. I mean, there are some really nasty people in this world that just destroy people's lives when they cheat on them. It's more than the physical cheating. It's the emotional and the mental. And they'll post this information on Cheaterville, and it's surprising to see the comments that some people have. I mean, it takes a long time sometimes for someone to get over being cheated on.
Is your buddy's ex-wife aware of the fact that she's the genesis of all this?
No, I don't think she is because I haven't talked to her, and I know he most certainly hasn't. But, you know, that was just one of many instances that, you know, when I realized that was one of probably 100 that I knew of where the time had come to start a site like this. But this happened quite a few years back.
Do you get any reaction from people who are the cheaters who maybe perhaps for one reason or another aren't aware of how they've actually hurt someone? Have you heard from people like that, or have the former people that have been cheated on heard from the cheaters after they've been posted on your site?
Yes, and that is the amazing thing about Cheaterville, why I love the company so much, obviously, because I'm the founder. But, you know, when someone gets cheated on, it's usually a very nasty, messy affair. The other person just is gone. They're out of the other person's life, and there's really no apologies in most cases. So we're seeing that someone will post a cheater, and for them, if you read the post, it's almost therapeutic. You can tell as you read from beginning to end. And then the cheater will find out. They'll respond to the post. Now, honestly, I would say 2 out of 10 people will step to the plate and say, yes, I cheated, I'm sorry, I did too, you know, did this, please forgive me. The rest, it's all lies. So as far as everything happens in the United States, there are no cheaters. Everyone's a victim on cheaterville.com. If you're posting on our site, every cheater plays the victim.
Are you getting any responses from people outside of the United States?
Canada, which is great. We are starting to see a lot of traffic coming from Canada, and I'm so appreciative of it. So Canada, and that's basically where the majority of traffic outside the United States is coming from. It's great.
Now, what exactly, is there a cost for someone to post on the website? How does it work exactly?
No, that's the best part. It's free. It's 100% free to post. You can search for a cheater for free. The site is 100% free.
So people go to the site, and then what? They just tell their story? Is there a certain amount of words or characters they're allowed to write? Or?
Yeah, so there's a 2,000 character limit. And people come to the site for different reasons. I have found, at least in the United States, and I'm included, there's a lot of narcissistic people where the first thing they want to do is they search for themselves. And then they see that they're not on the website. Then they'll search for their significant other. And then maybe a couple of friends. And then they'll go and read a couple of the posts, and next thing you know, they decide to post about a cheater themselves if it's something that happened to them.
Where do you see this going? How big can Cheaterville.com become as far as you're concerned?
Well, the thing with Cheaterville, it's more than just Cheaterville. We've also launched Cupidville.com, which is our online dating site, and I think that's why we're going to be such a huge company, because Cupidville is going to be the first site that ties into a cheater database. So if you're a known cheater in Cheaterville, you cannot become a member of Cupidville. So we're trying to get rid of the players and the people, the scammers. There's so many people on Match and eHarmony that they're just out for prey, basically, and they're married and they're saying they're single. We're going to weed through all that, and we won't even allow you to become a member if you're on the Cheaterville database.
So you're saying there's no redemption for those who are on the cheater list?
Yeah, we're going to take it on a case-by-case basis to see what that redemption might be, but we try to stay out of being the judge and jury, just like that, you know, Cheaterville or Cupidville. But I see this company becoming huge. Zynga's got their IPO with Farmville tied into it around the corner, and then Facebook sometime next year. And I know we are definitely looking hard at having an IPO shortly after Facebook has theirs.
Well, it's an interesting site indeed. The site is cheaterville.com. And James, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the time as well. And thank you for supporting us, Canada. Love you guys.
James McGibney, founder of cheaterville.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show. And again, that's show number 0099. And you'll find links to James's website.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of the legal thriller The Beneficiary, and we'll take a picnic with the author of Picnic in Pastiche. Plus, we have lots more Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. But we have more Stuff File news right here, right now. After a Frontier Airlines flight from Phoenix to Milwaukee, a flight attendant spotted a suspicious substance on the plane and called the Milwaukee Fire Department's Hazardous Materials Unit. Now, according to a Frontier spokesperson by the name of Peter Kowalczyk, the white powder was found on a diaper changing counter in a laboratory in a dotted pattern as if it had been shaken out of a dispenser. I wonder what it could be. A dirty diaper was also found in the waste bin. Oh my, the plot thickens. Not surprisingly, the substance turned out to be, wait for it, baby powder. We contacted the Transportation Safety Administration out of an abundance of caution, Kowalczyk explained. Really? You figure? She didn't think it could possibly be baby powder? What did she think it was, cocaine or anthrax? I don't think I want to be on any of her flights. Just saying. Elsewhere, Olympic National Park in Washington State is urging hikers to please stop urinating along backcountry trails, speaking of washrooms, so to speak. Not only is it just plain gross and unsanitary, it also attracts mountain goats who like to lick the urine for salt. The bigger problem is these aren't your sweet, tame billy goats that you've seen down at the petting zoo. These are aggressive goats, one of which gored a Port Angeles man to death last fall. And if hikers don't stop peeing, the popular park may close trails where goats follow people or enter campsites. Backcountry campers are being advised to urinate at least 200 feet away from trails to prevent the trails from turning into, quote, long linear salt licks, unquote. On the upside, if you ever find yourself stranded without salt, now you know where you can get some. And in Kingman, Arizona, Loriano Lawrence Lovato let his frustration at his Camaro get the best of him. When the car wouldn't start, Lovato retaliated against the vehicle by pulling his gun and firing two rounds through the windshield and into the dashboard. Neighbors called police, which led to a standoff as Lovato refused to come out of his house. He eventually came out and was arrested. After pleading guilty, he was sentenced to 3 years probation and 90 days in jail. Gee, didn't James Brown also go on a shooting spree with his car once, or at least at his car once, I should say? In New York City, the Le Petit Puppy in Greenwich Village has the misfortune of being located in an area that is surrounded by bars. This has created a big problem as the store is often frequented by drunk customers who tend to stumble in after happy hour and purchase a puppy without thinking. So store owner Dana Rich has a new policy. Customers who have been drinking are now forbidden to even hold puppies, much less purchase one. People who have clearly been drinking will be asked to come back the next day. Employees say they stress how much work it is to own a dog and would gladly rather lose a sale than send a puppy into an unsafe home. Wow, who knew puppies were a drunk impulse buy? And in North Naples, Florida, 22-year-old Mary G. Baston has been arrested for allegedly hitting her live-in boyfriend on the head with a frying pan. Yes, a frying pan. After he refused to let her use his razor. The boyfriend says Bastian became angry with him when he refused to let her borrow his razor to use in the shower. Allegedly, Bastian began attacking her boyfriend while he attempted to hide the razors in a kitchen cabinet. After first being clawed and scratched on his face and chest, the victim told police Bastian then grabbed the frying pan and hit him over the head with it, leaving significant cuts on his face. Bastian admits to slamming the pan against the counter during the altercation, but denied striking him in the head. By the way, you'll be happy to know this loving couple have a child together. Which reminds me of the previous story. You know, you need a license to have a dog. Perhaps Le Petit Puppy should prevent them from having a dog, too. That's all I'm thinking. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, in England, 38-year-old Sean Murphy was so desperate to get rid of a painful wart on his middle finger that he downed several pints of beer, then blew the finger off with a shotgun. I'm not kidding. He was then arrested for possession of an illegal firearm, but the judge took pity on him after hearing how he had been troubled by the ugly growth for more than 5 years. Mr. Murphy said he had been to his doctor several times, but nothing could get rid of the wart. Fearing that he would be stuck with it forever, he picked up a 12-gauge Beretta and blasted the finger. Well, at least he got rid of the wart and most of the finger. Talk about throwing the baby out with the bathwater in this case, huh? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Larry Hines has been a lawyer for 40 years. Well, now he has just released a novel that looks at the dark side of the legal profession. It's called The Beneficiary. And Larry joins us on the line from California. Hi, Larry.
Yes, good to hear from you.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So, the dark side of the legal profession, what exactly is the dark side of the legal profession?
A lot of people ask that. Well, we have a wonderful legal system in this country, as Canada does, of course, but it all functions just on the basis of people, you know, and you have, therefore, you have good judges, good lawyers, bad lawyers, and the dark side is where the concept of prejudice and bias and, you know, just the not-so-good participants can affect the justice system and of course certainly affect the rights of individuals in the court system.
As someone who has been in the legal profession for so long, I'm sure you've heard the stories and the jokes about what a lot of the general public feels about the legal profession. Do you feel that maybe in a little way you're kind of feeding into that with a book like this?
I hope not. I think this is very realistic. I mean, if someone looks at the at what I'm saying in there, I feel we do have a wonderful system of justice. I mean, we brought the common law over from England, as you folks did in Canada, and it's a wonderful system. It's just that it functions based on people, and there are people of different degrees, just like doctors. There are good doctors, excellent doctors, medium doctors, poor doctors, you know, and when you get into the element of the not so good, you know, you hit the weaknesses of the system. But, you know, we have, by and large, phenomenal judges, but there are those that just don't care and that have their own personal biases and prejudices. And so I'm hoping I'm presenting a balanced approach here, but it's, you know, it's partly just an adventure story, but at the same time to educate the public on a little bit about our justice system.
It's interesting that you brought up doctors, because one thing that seems to be a trend these days are doctors, lawyers, and other professionals writing thrillers about the profession that they work in. What led you, a lawyer, to write a thriller like this?
Well, I wasn't aware that was a phenomenon going on, but I can answer for myself. I started this. I've always been an avid reader, and I love. I read every legal novel that's ever published, just about, and all kinds of mystery and adventure stories. That's just what I like. And I thought it was going to be pretty easy, and then I started it maybe about 10 years ago, I finished the first one, and I am the beneficiary, and it was under a different title. It was called Spousal Influence at the time, but I knew it had to be rewritten. And then my wife got ill, and so I set it aside. And when she passed, I got back to it and I renamed it and changed the characters. And so I guess I wrote it because that's what I like to read. That's the simple answer.
Now, you mentioned that your wife got ill and she passed away. You're also sending some of the donating all net profits of this book to a charity that's named in your late wife. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. It is. That's the Nadine Griffey Academy of Kenya. I started that a couple years after she passed. It was started in 2006. And the original intent was to build a school for children in the from the slums of Nairobi. And we bought land, and we were marching all in the right direction and everything. And then we bumped into the government and decided it was easier to sponsor the children into existing private boarding schools. So we have three partners now in Kenya, great private boarding schools, and have a group of children, and we're in the process of... matter of fact, I'm going to Kenya in August to film a documentary on what the Academy is doing there as a fundraiser.
Now tell us, getting back to the book itself, The Beneficiary, mm-hmm. Tell us what the story is about.
Well, the story is about... essentially about a conflict between Dylan Clark, which is the main trial lawyer, and the Honorable Helena Pecht, who is his nemesis, who's in this book, the biased, prejudiced judge that's going to make sure that he loses in the end result. And so it's a contrast there. And in the process, there are it's about a will trust contest, about a former actress that married a very wealthy man, and then when he died, his heirs sued her, claiming that she defrauded him and because she got the bulk of his assets. And so Dylan comes in to defend him, and it's in that context that the story develops. And you've got some great trial lawyers involved on both sides, and you've got some questionable ethics. You've got witnesses that. Are perjuring themselves, evidence that's kind of pilfered by one side, and it kind of concludes in a fairly dramatic trial with some good ups and downs, I think.
With 40 years in the profession, you've seen a lot and done a lot in the legal world. Would anyone who you've worked with or come in contact with recognize themselves in your book?
Some of my former partners. Yeah, they've joked about that a little bit. But as far as the clients and the judge and everything, that's very carefully buried. All my books, I've just finished the second one now, at least in draft form, and they all are well away from any reality. But, of course, I'm drawing upon seeds of experiences that I've had from different cases, and I kind of pull them all together and tell a story in the context of one. So.
Would anybody who knows you recognize you in the book?
Well, I didn't intend that, but I guess there is part of me in Dylan, in that his wife passes away and he has a tough time in that regard. But I didn't realize it. It's a funny thing. I did not realize it when I was writing it. But yes, it's there. That was not my intention. The funny thing is that Dylan was just a one-time character. And when people have started looking at my second draft, or at least getting me to talk about it, they were disappointed that I didn't put Dylan Clark back in there. So I've worked him back into the second part of the book, and perhaps I'll stay with the character for a few novels and see how it works. So far the people like the character of Dylan Clark, but he's far more capable than I ever was, put it that way.
You say you started writing this book before your wife passed away, and then you did a rewrite on the book. Was at least the rewrite, especially considering your main character is also someone who was a widower, was the rewrite a cathartic experience for you?
Oh, good question. I suppose in hindsight I would say yes, but I didn't realize it at the time. because I wasn't thinking of myself as the character. You know, when I wrote the thing, you always envision somebody as the character, some real person. At least that's what I tend to do. And I always thought, like, Gene Hackman. Well, I thought of a bunch of actors that have played roles, and Gene Hackman was one. So kind of his image is in my mind as I was writing this thing. Sure, I guess every author puts a part of themselves into the characters.
The novel is called The Beneficiary. As you mentioned, you're working on your second one, and I believe that's called Shattered Justice. Is that correct?
It's called Shattered Justice, and it's... it's about in simple terms, it's about a divorce that just went very, 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 very wrong.
Is there any other kind?
Well, it's it's a woman that gets terribly worked over by a husband who was out to annihilate her, if you will, make sure she did. A very wealthy man that who didn't want her and their retarded son to get anything. And a very unethical attorney took up his cause. And there are those types of attorneys. They're gladiators. They'll do battle for anything. It doesn't matter who's right or wrong or what the ethics is. They'll just be gladiators. And there are not many of them, but every community probably has some of them. it takes you, kind of bounces you all the way around the world in terms of an ultimate rescue of this woman. The focus of the story, the key character, is a paralegal, a young female paralegal going to law school. But as I said before, I've worked Dylan back into it. So,
but the current one, which is the one that's out now, is called A Beneficiary, and it's written by Larry Hines. We should mention once again that all net profits will be going to support the Nadine Griffey Academy of Kenya. There's also a website people can check out for that, which is www.nadinegriffeyacademy.com, and people could also find more information by going to your website, which is larryhinesauthor.com, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Everyone's invited.
Great. And the book is available now?
It is. Yes, it's available in bookstores and in paperback and electronic version through Kindle, through Amazon, their Kindle, and Barnes & Noble's Publit, and some other places. Yeah, it's quite available.
Larry, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Good talking with you.
Larry Hines, author of The Beneficiary. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0099. And you'll find links to the sites that I've mentioned that Larry has, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly for the Kindle. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The poet Gertrude Stein once said, "A rose is a rose is a rose." What she meant, according to some scholars, is that when all is said and done, a thing is what it is. That's pretty simple, but the message even applies to law. It's the idea behind a doctrine called the open and obvious rule that bans lawsuits over obvious risks. Take a knife, for example. If it's made correctly, it's sharp, so a knife maker should not be sued if someone carelessly cuts himself. It is what it is. While this is simple, too many lawyers today ignore it. And a personal injury lawyer recently sued a grocery store on behalf of a man who pricked his finger on a rose. Let's be fair, years ago this lawsuit would be dismissed and the lawyer fined. But nowadays? Well, there is still hope. This is a new case, and the judge has time to do the right thing. If he does, we could call that a case of poetic justice. Learn more. Go to our website at centerforamerica.org.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal health care, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we will talk to the author of Picnic in Pastiche. Plus, a little later on, we indeed do have an idiot of the day. As a matter of fact, we've got a twofer, two idiots for the price of one, coming up a little later on to end off the show. But before we get to that, a couple more Stuff File news stories to wrap things up. In Ashland, Massachusetts, 24-year-old Eric Gottemer was arrested and accused of driving a stolen Mercedes-Benz while smoking marijuana. An Ashland officer was on patrol when his automated license plate reader indicated that the Mercedes sedan was listed as being stolen, so he pulled a car over. When the officer approached the vehicle, he said he was overwhelmed by the smell of marijuana coming out of the window. Eric then complained to the officer, saying, "Man, you guys ruined my buzz. Can't smoke no more weed tonight." He was right. Turned out he had 7 prior convictions and 10 probation violations. His lawyer, Meryl Kakura, asked for her client to be released without bail, noting that he had a pretty good record of showing up for court. The judge set bail at $150. No, wait a minute. Seriously? $150 for smoking dope while driving a stolen car? Now who's high? The guy or the judge? What kind of moron is that judge? $150 for driving a stolen car. There's an incentive. Meanwhile, finally, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, one of the biggest insurance companies, Ergo, in the UK, apparently has taken this sales contest idea to a whole new level. They reportedly held an orgy to reward successful salesmen and hired prostitutes for a 2007 party held in Budapest's historic Art Nouveau thermal baths. A German business newspaper reports that the 20 prostitutes wore color-coded armbands designating their availability. An unnamed participant said guests were able to take the women to 4-poster beds at the spa and, quote, "do whatever they liked," unquote. After such encounter, the women were stamped on the lower arm in order to keep track of how often each woman was frequented. Now that the story has become public, 4 years later, Ergo said it regretted what had happened and that the party was a serious violation of company rules. You know, it's interesting that a company would actually need to write down a rule for something like this, but anyway. A company spokesperson also said the managers and board members responsible no longer work for us. Yeah, I'll bet. Wow. You know, some companies don't even have Christmas parties anymore. Maybe company picnics would be a better idea. And that, by the way, is a very subtle segue to our next guest. Tina Powell has had a lifelong love affair for picnics. She also has a new book out called Picnic in Pastiche. She's on the line with us right now from British Columbia. Hi, Tina.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what is the fascination for you with picnics?
Well, ever since I was a child, I always loved going on picnics. And what ended up happening was that I was planning this family vacation to our ancestral town in Italy called Pastiche. It's in the south of Italy. And my parents had not been there. My family had not been there. I had never been there, only my grandparents. So I kept thinking, I love alliteration, and I kept thinking, oh, we should have a picnic in Pastiche as I'm planning our vacation. I went, oh, picnic in Pastiche, I like that. I thought, what a great title for a book. So I started then thinking about all of these very special picnics that I had in my life and how most of my life lessons I had learned on a picnic.
Now, what makes, because I know what makes a bad picnic, what makes a good one?
Wow, well, there's lots of things that go into a great picnic. I think, of course, always the right people and the right place, but I think that's what's so fascinating about picnics is that we have a perception that they have to be perfect. So there's this certain expectation, and we want to make sure we get the perfect food and the perfect basket and the perfect provisions. And so through this whole journey of my life, I've been almost striving every time to have this perfect picnic. And of course, life is not perfect. And it ends up, it's the joy that we find in the imperfections of life that make the stories interesting.
Now, you wrote this book. Who did you see as the primary reader?
Well, I think anyone can enjoy a great picnic story. And what's interesting about the book is that it basically outlines the 10 most significant picnics in my life and how through picnics we can learn many of life's valuable lessons. And what's fascinating is each true picnic story is also supported by photographs, famous quotes such as Lee Trevino, Bess Truman, song lyrics such as Teddy Bear's Picnic, and some of my all-time favorite picnic recipes. But the magic of the book is that the reader believes, oh, I'm going to read this nice book about Tina Powell's picnics. But they end up rediscovering and savoring their own picnic memories along the way. And after they read the stories, they start hearkening back to their own memories, and it ends up being a wonderful journey down memory lane for them through my picnics.
You say you've learned so much being at picnics, during picnics. What's the biggest lesson you've learned at a picnic?
Oh, great question. Well, there's quite a few of them. I'd say one of the big lessons I've learned is, dive in, challenge yourself, and always keep your top on. And how I learned that one is it was my favorite picnic, but it was certainly one of the most exciting. What ended up happening was that I was going on an island picnic in northern Ontario. And I had to swim from the boat to the island because the water was too choppy for us to get closer to the shore, which was a challenge because I do not swim very well. So my arms were flailing, it wasn't pretty, my legs were kicking, and I was gasping for air to reach this shore to have this picnic. And thanks to a wardrobe malfunction, I almost, and I say the word almost, splashed my husband's boss and his young family. Thankfully, I figured things out before I emerged from the water.
Mm. Now, is one of the things, because a lot of times when people think about picnics, they think of the enjoyment that a picnic might be, but they don't like the trouble of either getting there or, you know, the before or after, setting up, taking apart. Do you find that there are some people who avoid picnics because they think it's so much of a bother?
Well, I think it doesn't have to be a bother, and maybe that's part of what this book is going to share with people, is that picnics can happen anywhere, anytime. You can have an indoor picnic, so if the weather's not great, don't worry, still plan your picnic and spread out the blanket on the living room floor and have a wonderful picnic, and I've done many of those. You can have a picnic by the side of the road on your way to another vacation or another spot. And you can, in fact, the picnic that we had in Paseche, basically the journey of the picnics begin in Niagara Falls, Canada, and lead all the way to Italy for the last picnic. The picnic we had in Paseche, we were at a wonderful Italian market and just purchased all the items fresh and took our bursting plastic bags to this picnic site and had our wonderful picnic there. And we didn't have to do anything but shop for it. So shopping for a picnic is lots of fun, too.
Do you ever picnic spontaneously?
Oh, absolutely. The spontaneous picnics are a lot of fun, too. Though I have to admit, a picnic is a bit like a holiday, like a mini vacation. And half the fun of going on a vacation is planning it, getting all of the brochures and the materials and planning on, you know, going online and seeing where you're going to go and what you're going to do each day. So I also think that's true with picnics, in that you can plan your picnic and sitting down with your friends or your family and saying, okay, who's going to bring what and who's in charge of this and that. That's part of the fun and the excitement. I also think I have some tips for picnics. I think you need a good picnic blanket. And so my personal favorite right now is water repellent on one side, so you can put it down and you always stay dry. I have a food safety tip, and that is to fill reusable water bottles partway with water and then freeze them, and they make great ice packs as well as cold drinks when you're on your picnic. They sort of serve a double duty. I always think you should leave your Blackberries, iPhones, Game Boys, iPads, any screens, leave them at home if possible. But do pack a Frisbee, football, checkers, a good book, and maybe one about picnics.
Mm. And you mentioned technology and the world that we live in. Do you find, I mean, for you, obviously, you love picnics, you've written about picnics, you continue to go on picnics, but do you find, generally speaking, that for a lot of people, picnics was something that they used to do and they don't do it as much today as they used to?
I believe that is true, and I think that that's something that we need to bring back into our lives. I think picnics do have an impression of being very nostalgic, but they don't ever have to be something of the past. And in fact, I think it's a wonderful way to disconnect from the busyness of our lives and really appreciate the gifts and blessings that we have, whether that's special people in our lives. It's time to just enjoy your family and your friends and good food and good wholesome fun and just to relax and just take a breath. And I think any picnic is a gift, and we should give ourselves more gifts.
I must confess, I have not been to a picnic as an adult, and the only picnics I've ever been to was when I was a child, and they were huge group affairs.
Yeah.
Huge group affairs, social groups, and it would involve rented buses.
Yes, right. Well, they're always fun. I mean, there's all kinds of picnics, and that's one of the things in the book is that there are 10 different picnics, and they really touch upon so many different aspects. There is the, you know, the nice family picnic that I remember with my aunts and uncles. There was a romantic picnic that went awry. There was a very beautiful indoor picnic that I had where we couldn't afford anything, but it was the simple things in life that were so wonderful. There's company picnics. There's Canada Day picnics. There's also this wonderful family picnic that we had in Italy. So the idea of even though you're going on a holiday, even if you're in a hotel, go and plan a picnic. A lot of hotels will offer to prepare for you a picnic basket so you can go exploring and sightseeing with your picnic.
I also find, and correct me if I'm wrong, that when you talk about people who are most apt to go on picnics, they come under certain categories. People like yourself or myself who come from ethnic backgrounds where picnicking is something they might have done or their parents may have done in the so-called old country, or people who live in rural areas, and that if you live in urban centers, not a lot of picnickers.
Oh, that could be true. I don't really know the statistics on that, but I do find that in urban areas, though, a lot of people are living in multi-unit housing and condos and so forth. And so for them to get outside, the parks are often filled with people who are, because they don't have their own green space, perhaps with their apartment or a condo, that they can get outside and enjoy a park and lie on a blanket and read a book and have a wonderful lunch and just have a relaxing afternoon. I mean, when was the last time you were able to do that? I mean, that is, it sounds like a little bit of heaven to me. And it's interesting, though, you mentioned that the ethnicity sometimes comes into play. The foreword of the book was written by celebrity chef Massimo Capra. And he harkens back to his first picnic, and he tells a picnic story in the foreword of being in the Tuscan Hills and being in a vineyard and enjoying wine and the food that his mother made, lasagna, and bork cutlets, melanaise, and stuffed chicken and salads, and the homemade wine and the bread from the Tuscan farmer's field they were in. I mean, it was just, and he just, when he wrote that, and he said, although it has been many years since I thought about that delectable picnic in Tuscany, the memories came flooding back thanks to author Tina Powell. I hope Picnic in Bastici helps you to savor your own picnic memories and encourages you to create some new ones. So my mission, actually, Peter, is to create a renaissance of picnics of sorts and create a picnic movement where people will dust off those picnic baskets and get out there with family and friends or have a picnic inside, a romantic picnic, whatever, and just enjoy some downtime.
And there's also a good cause involved, too, for those who buy the book, correct?
That's very true. I am a big fan of giving back whenever I can with all of my books. And so this particular book, $2 from every book sold will be going to Food Banks Canada.
Excellent. The book is called Picnic in Bastici, and people can also check out the website, which is www.lifeisapicnic.ca. And I thank you very, very much, Tina, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you, Peter, and I hope to hear about your picnic.
I'll keep you in the loop. Tina Powell, author of Picnic in Bastici. Again, you can find Tina's website at lifeisapicnic.ca, and you can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0099, and you'll find links to her site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and we're almost to the end of the show, and you know what that means? It means it's time for an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
And as I mentioned this week, we have a twofer because both idiots are so similar. Eric Coogan, age 33, was arrested in Port St. Lucie, Florida in June after presenting a holdup note to a teller at a TD Bank. To get to the teller, Coogan walked right by a sheriff's cruiser parked in front of the bank and a deputy in uniform seated inside the bank's entrance. Boy, how much more warning do you need that this is not a good idea? And in April, Matthew Huddleston, age 33, pleaded guilty in Mobile, Alabama, to robbing a Regions Bank using a holdup note that mentioned a gun. He got away, but was arrested after he returned a few minutes later to ask for the holdup note back. Wow, there's nothing to add to these two stories except to say that both of these gentlemen are idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0099. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0099. You can email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes.
Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.